Good morning. I would like to take this opportunity to welcome you all to this panel discussion, which we had originally scheduled. Originally, we wanted to have a panel here speaking and then discuss the issue, but a couple of them couldn't make it, and then some cancelers at the very last minute. And we decided that rather than cancel the session, we'll use it for free flow discussion of issues related to the affordable healthcare and how it affects immigrants. And then we use that for, we synthesize the information that we get here and then write it in a form to APHA so APHA can come up with a policy on immigrant health as far as the affordable healthcare program, which was passed by Congress, I believe 2 years ago. So that's the reason why we are here. And usually we, at APHA, we have, we present scientific papers and on immigrant health and other health issues. And then we also have conferences where CBOs involved in immigrant health, they also meet and discuss issues with immigrant health. But then at the same time, we may not be too politically involved on issues with policy and how it affects immigrants. So we want to use this opportunity to have this dialogue. And based on the lessons that we learned when the Affordable Healthcare Plan was being discussed, the whole thing was hijacked by the right wing, and we stood helpless as the extremists moved agenda. So so what have we learned? So what can we do? So rather than sit down here, we also decided that, okay, let's discuss it, have something, and APHA can come with policy. So the format we are going to have is that it's going to be free-flowing. I may not necessarily need to call on you to talk, but then just wait until somebody's finished speaking, because I don't want people to stay here and not speak. We want everybody to express their view. We respect our viewpoints, and then we're going to be taking notes. And we have a member here on the, in our caucus who works on policy issues and so on. That's Esther Shapiro. So I'll open the floor by letting Esther maybe brief us 5 to 10 minutes on how issues that we synthesize here, the process is going to take up to a PhD level. Hi.
Hello, everyone.
You can come here.
Buenos dias. Well, I have my notes here, and okay. I'm going to pace a little bit because I walked over here and saw this headline, illegal immigrant guilty of killing nun. The Washington, D.C. Examiner. Did anybody else have this headline catch their eye? So I want to tell you about this illegal immigrant convicted of killing a nun because it really makes the point about what we want this dialogue to be about. So can people hear me? Am I good here? Because that way I have my notes and I can pace. Because my name is Esther Shapiro, Esther Rebeca Shapiro Brock, I often explain to people that Russian Polish Jews ended up all over Latin America. I had the good fortune and blessing to end up in Cuba. So instead of being ashes in the ovens of the killing fields of Eastern Europe, I got to be part of Cuba's multiracial conversation. It changed me forever. In terms of how I think about issues of immigration and what it means to create multiracial, multicultural, multi-religious communities that appreciate one another. My family unfortunately didn't care for the turn in the Cuban Revolution and brought me as a child to the United States. This young man accused of killing someone, it was actually a drunk driving incident. The likelihood that as a drunk driver from another community, he would have been on the headlines blaring that he killed somebody none or not is very unlikely. He's being used to drive a point. But I want you to know that this is a boy who was, he's now 24 years old, who was taken, who was smuggled out of Bolivia as a young child. So he, like I, were involuntary immigrants, as children are, because we come where our parents tell us to come. So even though he's being misused for media-driven conservative policy change, saying that illegal immigrants are a danger to us, I want to use this young man's situation as an example of what happens when, as Carola Orozco and colleagues just published in the Harvard Educational Review, what happens to children and families when we drive them into the shadows of life. So there's a very wonderful new paper on living in the shadows, what are the consequences for immigrant children and families. There's a lot of us that believe that just like you counter the conservative argument, immigrants are bad for the U.S., they kill people, they are a drain on services. It's our job to counter with policy based in science, but we also have to be very aware of what kinds of issues might move people to join our cause. And I do think that the health status of immigrant children, who are many of them either citizens or else brought here to the United States through no choice of their own, are a group that may not move mountains, but they are certainly able to help us shift the policy dialogue. So I wanted to say I know that Michael, Michael Lyon is here, and he's been very involved through the medical care division in some of the policy conversations that have taken place about APHA policy. Is there anybody here from the Latino Caucus who was involved in the policy, the late breaker policy that made it pretty far, but is just short of acceptance because of some editing issues? So I just wanted to give you a very quick sense or overview of what's happened with APHA policy. I'm not a policy analyst. I'm a clinical psychologist in recovery. And what I mean by that is I got tired of, as they say, pulling people out of the river one at a time and figuring out who's throwing them in the river in the first place, as Nancy Krieger says about social epidemiology for the 21st century. So if we're going to be accountable, we work from wherever we stand to make a difference. And so that's one of the things that I invite all of us to do here today is where do we stand and what are our circles of influence. So for me, that's Heike knows that I just emailed the student that did the poster with me in San Diego because we had a tiny little review of American Psychological Association, National Social Work Association, and American Public Health Association policy statements regarding immigrant health. Social work had the most activist, progressive, and up-to-date policies in 2008, and APHA at the time still had 17 standing policies, actually a couple of them have been withdrawn, that mention immigrant health in some fashion in the policy. They are very wonderful, they are very meaningful, and they're also very out of date. So one of the things that our caucus decided was that it was very important to think as a caucus and to have a conversation as a caucus about where we wanted to take a stand. Now, as you know, in the last couple of years, both immigration reform and healthcare reform have been moving targets. They remain so, even though they also remain two broken systems whose intersections are very important, not just to the health of undocumented immigrants, but to the health of immigrant communities and the many of us who care about them. The Pew recently did a report saying that half of Latinos fear for either themselves or a close family member or relative in intensified enforcement. intensified enforcement has really changed the panorama for the health, well-being, access, not just to services, access to education, access to anything other than living in fear in the confines of your home. So we feel like, just like there's been a lot of talk now about doing health equity work by talking about health in all policies, I feel like we need to think about making these connections and immigrant integration and well-being in all policies, because the consequences are dire. So I wanted to say that right now, the Latino Caucus worked with medical care and with the Immigrant Refugee Caucus, among others. The Black Caucus health workers was involved too. Got pretty far on a policy statement, essentially calling on integration of immigrants into access to health care and health coverage within the healthcare reform, and also calling on policies to make sure that people had access to services and that there was attention to discrimination and emphasis on cultural competence. So it turned out to be, I think, an excellent policy statement, and apparently it's just short of acceptance due to some editorial work that needed to be done. So that is apparently kind of in process. And then Michael Lyons in the medical care section submitted an opposition to the Secure Communities program. Secure Communities is immigration enforcement strategy that is brought to the level of local communities. It is something all of us interested in immigrant health must oppose, because it means that immigrants live in fear of the people that might provide them with safety and services. So the last thing I wanted to say about how the Immigration Caucus was thinking about the issues, Lisa Kakura Jones and I worked together in a symposium a couple of years ago that led us to realize the incredible importance of local, county, and state level policies. We've been very focused on federal policy, but there's a lot of opportunities at the local level. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that I think all of us really have to think about educating our circles in how do we let immigrants in communities know that it's safe to and important to use services. In Massachusetts, I worked especially closely with the Department of Child and Family Services, the Child Welfare community. Educators and social workers are one circle of outreach. Community-based organizations are another that we've been using in Massachusetts. We've been doing a lot of community-based education on rights and training people on what to do by stop them. So we wanted to engage the caucus in a discussion of these issues to see how you would like to pursue these policy questions via the caucus and the caucus's partnerships. So, Heike, is there anything else?
Perhaps you may want to summarize a little bit what the policy is about that you have been working on the last time.
What we had been working on for the caucus before we interrupted that to join what the Latino Caucus was offering was we presented a proposal. We were going to present a proposal with two approaches. So one was promoting public health policies and practices for immigrant health equity, had a strategy to emphasize immigrant health equity and the strengths of immigrants, including the epidemiological paradox, bringing attention to the impact of racism, because For many immigrant communities, health assets erode with time spent in the U.S. So that was one strategy based on a particular kind of framing of the issue and underlying research support. And then the other was an immigrant integration approach, immigrant integration and public health, addressing policies and practices in the public interest. This strategy emphasized that treating immigrants by documentation status and years in the U.S. as the access to health in the healthcare coverage does overlooks the interconnectedness of immigrants in the fabric of many communities and the consequences of punitive practices, not only for immigrants and their families, but for the broader public. So, for example, in the case of this young a Bolivian man who was convicted of drunk driving, we would start to think about what it meant to be taken out of his country and raised in isolation, raised with the fear of deportation, and what that might mean, for example, if he drops out of school or if he fails to get services for his drinking, that if we don't take care of families and communities, we create a public health hazard. And the problem with that approach is that it allows some people to continue to demonize immigrants. But in our discussion, we thought it was important to highlight the health consequences of excluding people from immigration, immigrants from health access, the consequences for immigrant children and mixed status families. That's something that has been very much emphasized by, say, the Urban Institute in their immigration strategies.
I didn't want to sit here because I don't feel well, and I thought I'm Heike Thiel de Bocanegra, and I just wanted to kind of summarize a little bit about the role of APHA in the healthcare reform, what we kind of did, and then probably you have some additional things to say. But basically, because I was chair at of the caucus chair at that time when the healthcare reform came through, and at that point within the Olivia Carter caucus was active in the governing council, and while healthcare reform was in the discussion, shaping up and so on, APHA took a strong stand really that it should include as well undocumented immigrants in the reform package. So basically, as you know, Medicaid, as it stands, is federally funded by federal taxpayers' dollars. So the stance is, if you are illegally here, you cannot apply and receive money for Medicaid. Additionally, if you are a legal resident but has been in this country for less than 5 years, you cannot sign up for Medicaid purposes. That was before. Some states then, as part of the child health insurance, like in New York State, for example, they would as well cover undocumented children, but the state-only funds. And in the healthcare reform, you had Medicaid expansion. So the question was then, who would be then included into the Medicaid expansion? And they did then now decide that everybody who is a legal resident can sign up for Medicaid, independent of having been here for 5 years or not. So they took that exclusion out of the picture. But then you still had the people, like the question of low-income persons who are part of the health insurance of the exchange, where then people can sign up into an exchange program. And how it works is that if you are between 133% and 400% poverty level, you can sign up, and if you are poor, you get a subsidy for your premium, so you don't have to sign. The person doesn't have to sign pay the whole premium, but basically participates in managed care, can pick out a plan of a managed care plan. So APHA was lobbying a lot that if you are undocumented here, that you can sign up for the exchange with your own money, so that you do not have, you do not take taxpayers' money to for this to be subsidized or anything. It is just like, as part of, as this whole exchange is set, being set up, then to say, okay, if you are somebody who just says, I will pay full fee and want to participate, I can do so, and that there is no requirement for whether you are legally here or not, to show your green card or social security number or something. At one point even they said, like, even for employer-based insurance, it should be as well. If you, if somebody is employed, the employer can, should be able to offer this even without having to check, without the insurance when you want to sign up, having to check for legal status. So APHA did wrote some paper, and I like some memos, talked to senators, tried to push it through. But as you know, after a lot of like back and forth in the discussion of the health care reform, at the end, they did not allow that undocumented, or that anybody independent of legal status could sign up for the exchange. So you have to prove to be legally in this country. So this excludes a lot of undocumented, even if they want to pay with their own money for premiums and so on. And this way kind of raises then the whole question of, like, what happens, for example, with mixed families, or as Esther said, sometimes kids, you bring over a kid at age 5, but the kid is illegally here, so you have another kid who is born here in the country, because you can sign up the kid that is US citizen, but you cannot sign up the older sibling, or you cannot, or one of the parents may be illegally, and so on. So it creates a whole set of problems. So one of our of the impetus that we then had as the caucus was, let's try to put a statement to say APA, that APHA is advocating to de-link health insurance from legal, verifying legal residency in the country, so that you can, basically for the reasons that I just explained. And in part then, when the Latino caucus started to do her, this general policy statement as a late breaker last year, so we kind of tied up with them, but we are still thinking of perhaps developing a separate policy just on this one issue, just having a very concrete, like a very specific statement that says, let's de-link it, one thing shouldn't have to do with the other. So that's kind of like the summary of where the policy process is then.
All right. We'll open it up now.
Yeah,
okay.
Question.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if somebody can kind of like run down what exactly the Health Care Reform Act says about immigrants. I mean, before, you know, what APHA is trying to do, what is that Reform Act saying about immigrant access to health care?
Basically, as far as I know, only what I just said.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, you normally have to be... in order to sign up for Medicaid, you have to be legally in this country. There is no 5-year bar anymore, so you can arrive. Do you want to correct me? So you have to be legally, and then you can sign up for Medicaid. So that was, so it's certainly an improvement for immigrants who just arrived, or if you just brought over your spouse or somebody to show them. So that's the legal residents.
Those are the legal ones, though.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that are here, documented immigrants.
Yeah.
They are documented here,
yeah.
And as I said, because before there, and this 5-year exclusion actually hasn't been always in place. It has been in place since 1996 from the Welfare Reform Act.
Mm-hmm.
So with Newt Gingrich, he kind of started when Medicaid was changed and TANF was changed and everything. that was when they tried to exclude, they had this five-year exclusionary bar of, you come over here, you are legally here, but God forbid that you sign up for Medicaid, unless you are in an emergency. So if you have an accident, you are then you are bleeding and before and not letting you so instead of letting you die, they will take care of you even if you are undocumented, breastfeeding. And childbirth is as well considered to be an emergency. So women who were pregnant could get their childbirth covered, and the US-born child then as well would be qualified for infant care. That continues as well. Prenatal, when some states had prenatal care even before the Health Reform Act, and expanded it as well to undocumented women to cover them, that as well can continue. And then there was
the five-year bar also excludes refugees. And if you have refugee status, you can get Medicaid within the 5 years.
Actually, I don't think that was correct.
In Maryland, you can. If you have an I-94 with refugee status,
it excludes them.
You can get
because refugees are different from legal immigrants. Yeah. And refugees could always qualify for Medicaid, because the whole from the get-go, from day one, they got
they come in with
because it is a different kind of way how the United States looks at them. They didn't come here voluntarily. So the argument of excluding the immigrants is, well, you don't want to give them sponsorship, like allow them to come over to this country. Supposedly they come over to work. And now they come all, like, say, oh, I need healthcare insurance, kind of, like, and I need publicly funded healthcare insurance. And that you would not, by having this exclusion, the argument was that means you don't just come over and then next the week after you go for cancer treatment and cost it. So that was kind of the rationale. So you had a question?
You first, then. Yeah. One other thing to my name is Anthony Sala, okay. So when you want to talk, if you can mention your name and then introduce and then you ask a question, that would be great.
Okay. Well, hi, my name is Michelle Brown.
Are you here at the back?
No,
not as much.
I can hear it softly. Well, hi, my name is Michelle Brown. I have two questions for you. The first one is, you mentioned that the 5 year bar has been now excluded.
Is that removed?
Yes.
Okay. And I really need to ask you that this is gonna help me so much about where I work, because so many people really are still developing healthcare policies around thinking that the healthcare bar for immigrants has not been removed. So can you tell me give me the citation behind what happened? Because I'll be honest with you, I just read a paper. And in reading it, they were implementing these healthcare programs, and so we still have the healthcare bar for immigrants.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, it's in the statement actually that the Latino caucus said was, it leaves in place the existing exclusion unless their states lift the exclusion for children and pregnant women. So it varies by state. Because the thing is, so if the state says we provide prenatal care to women who are under undocumented, then they can take care of this. And I don't want to misspeak, so it may be that it will be implemented in 2014 and not immediately as of now, and that may be
so let me just clarify what I'm hearing. This is so important for what I do to work my way. So what I'm hearing is that the section in the Affordable Care Act that I'm discussing, immigrants in general, whether you're documented or whether you are undocumented, that exclusion still remains. So what you tell me then is that it's up to the states now, if they want to change it, they could
I know that, but I'm familiar with that. So it's kind of thing, and I don't, and it may be, so I'm, like I said, it's not supposed to be implemented now, but then it only kicks in 2014. So for the undocumented, which are the last, health care reform doesn't do a thing.
No.
That's kind of the executive summary of undocumented, they are still left out, they are still depending on the safety net providers. Now what it means as well is that the safety net providers, like the community health centers and everybody else, will have big capacity problems coming 2014, because there will be more and more people who are then will be involved in Medicaid. So they will then look in have to serve the who need primary care. They will have to serve primary those people in primary care, and then if they have the choice between somebody who has now Medicaid and they get some sort of reimbursement versus somebody who comes in and is uninsured still and most likely undocumented, do you kind of come, whom do you pick? Do you kind of give preferential treatments to those people who are insured? And does this lead then to a two-tier system, even, or as we saw in Massachusetts, to long waiting lines,
to capacity problems?
So, and what does, so there will be as well in terms of the implementation of being excluded, it doesn't only mean, oh well, they don't get access to healthcare, to insurance options, but as well they might be excluded indirectly by having experiencing longer delay of getting an appointment at a safety net provider.
Okay, you? No,
yes. Then after that, yourself. Okay, you, yeah, you raise
your hand. My name is Abby Fatanda from the University of Pittsburgh, the Graduate School of Public Health. Yeah, what I'm very so confused, because I'm just learning a lot about immigrant laws and things like that. I'm really confused when we have immigrants that work in this country and they pay tax. You know, not all immigrants get money from under the table. Most of them pay tax and they even pay social security, which they will never be able to get if they end up being deported. So what is the point of not covering them and making sure their health is fine? So far they're still in this country. They can still go on with their regular, you know, working with the immigration status and doing the law, you know, the legal stuff. Either they can decide if they're able to be in this country or not. But so far they're here on this soil and they are working like any one of us and they're paying tax. So where does their tax end up going? Yeah, it's just, I think it's just basic common sense. When we have people like Senator and all these people who are well educated and well
rounded,
it really doesn't make sense to me that why should you, you know, pay tax? Okay, you're here illegally. I know I'm an immigrant, and I know that I'm not. When I was trying to be come into this country, I know how long it took me and what I had to do to get to this country to be here illegally. Okay, fine. But some people end up coming in illegally. Fine, they're here. They need to sort out their business. But so far, you're working, you're paying tax, and you're paying social security. Why wouldn't they take their care of their health? This doesn't really make sense. I think it's the most humane thing anybody can do to another human being, to leave these people not covered with health care. Mm. And the fact that they're here in this country, what brought them into this country? Because if the country is fine, there's no way on earth. I'm an immigrant. If my country is fine, there's no way on earth. I love this country, but I won't be in this country. I will be back in my fine, warm country where I don't have to see snow for the rest of my life. But the problem is, I'm here, I love it here, and I made a choice to come here. But those people, majority of immigrants that end up in this country, either legally or illegally, there must be a reason for you as a human being to leave your family, to leave everything you love, to leave everything you know in your life, and leave it behind. Leave your parents behind. Leave your father, your mother, everybody behind, and come into a foreign country to be treated hostilely, no matter what. Initially, when you come to this country, it's hell, because you're trying to figure out the language, the people, how to, you know, people will see you, they will say hello to you. In your country, maybe people say hello to you, say maybe they hate me, maybe they like me. All of that, you go through years of just going through all that, and eventually settle down. And then you're working, really working hard, three jobs, day in, day out, you're paying tax. And they say you will not be covered. That's the lowest thing you can do to any human being, no matter what. not even human at all, not cover either you're legal or not illegal. So far they are working, because their money is just going into the drain.
Okay. You are preaching to the choir, unfortunately. Okay, you first, then you. Okay, sir.
I'm Michael Lyon, and I really agree with what you're saying. I mean, those in a society that's run for profit, those who control society have put forward trade policies that just devastate the economies of foreign countries on one hand, and make people in this country lose jobs because the jobs move overseas, and the people in the countries that are devastated by these trade policies, of course, have to come here, and they're not allowed to exist in any kind of decent kind of way. And it all has to do with profit. And it all has to do with capitalism. And what had kind of motivated our policy proposal was that as much as APHA had kind of danced around so many of these issues, they've been absolutely unwilling to directly confront the war, directly confront trade proposals, to directly confront any immigrant racism. And so what we wanted to do was to present a fair, very simple, very small policy resolution which would say APHA is against the exclusion of undocumented immigrants for health care. Very simple. And simultaneously, a lot of other groups in the Latino Caucus, and it sounds like this group, were putting together very, very good and very complete and very well thought out analysis of what the problems with immigrant health care were. So it's like there was two different proposals that were going on, and they had different purposes. And what happened last year was they sort of got there was kind of a shotgun marriage that was proposed. So those two proposals got joined, and then in the intervening year, as various deadlines and proposals for corrections happened, it somehow died. Mm-hmm. And so, so one of the questions, before us is: do we want to try to dig it up out of the grave and resubmit it in February? Which I think would be a very good idea.
Yeah, I think it'd be a shame to have put in all that work and not.
But let's see, how many of you are familiar with when we talk about APHA policies, how many are familiar with the policy process at APHA? One.
Okay. And that's your job, right? okay, because you were at the meeting last night. Yeah.
They did
call
us for the Dream Hack.
So perhaps you should kind of, do you want to talk a little bit about the policy proposal? About the process? Do you know?
She raised
her
hand.
Yeah,
hands up. Let her speak, then we can get back to that. Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
No,
lady here.
Talking about her.
Yeah, the lady here.
Yes.
And I'm continuing to take notes.
Yeah, okay. Please. Please do.
Okay. Well, I agree with the last two speakers, and I was very happy to hear what they had to say. Let's see, I had a few comments to make. One is a wet blanket comment. My long experience in the APHA is that the struggle over these resolutions that put forward good ideas is very good to discuss them. But the fact of the matter is that even if you get the APHA to adopt a good proposal, like being for single-payer health plan, that has nothing to do with what the organization does in real life after we go home. Mm-hmm. When the Obama health care plan came up, they never said a word about single-payer. They're just anxious to, you know, be accepted by the Democratic politicians. So these struggles are important to us, but it doesn't actually mean that much whether the APHA passes it. They're good for us to educate ourselves about how we're going to go out and build a mass struggle. And to add what this lady said about things not making sense, I mean, the thing that really makes sense to the American economy is that in two senses, that immigrants are also illegal immigrants are paid these very low wages to do all these jobs, so a huge amount of profit is made off of them. And of course, they serve as a wonderful function for divide and conquer. I mean, that's the most important thing about depriving people of their rights, is that they can blame all the onuses of this system on illegal immigrants and you know, whatever other groups they attempt to scapegoat. And I don't think this system could actually survive without the divide and conquer aspects of racism against this group or that group, as well as by the money they save on the low wages and the low services that they provide. So actually, you know, that's why I'm a communist. Because I don't think you can change these things without changing this whole system. And I think we have to think about doing it internationally as well, just not nationally. And then, of course, the problem with using that word is people say, oh my God, well, it sounds good, but it didn't work. I agree, there's no place in the world today that could have that world apply to it. But I think when we talk about workers running society instead of bosses, unfortunately, that's the name of that system is communism, and we just have to do it a lot better, analyze the mistakes they made, do it better, and anybody that wants to talk about it with me more, I'll talk forever.
I'm trying to get people's names and locations, so I know you said your name is Michelle Brown, did you say? And where are you located, Michelle?
Well, I go to the School of the University of Baltimore.
Great.
Okay.
Well, what
are the
names?
Okay, all right.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
A quick question.
No, before then, there's a comment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you've spoken before, so you first time to come. Okay, sir.
I'm in a position, I work in Chicago. I just want to comment about the effects of what is going on. I mean, I kind of read the newspapers a lot and kind of following what happened in Brady Hospital with all the dialysis patients. Okay, give you an example. Undocumented, they stopped their dialysis, and some of them were told, we'll send you to Mexico, you can dialysis there. Or, you know, some people, they ended up coming back. Some of them, I think some of them died. Their attitude is basically, you know, quotation and hope you get your health care back where you come from, you know, type of thing. And it's being more blatantly fascistic, if you ask me, in terms of their approach. I work in the county health system in Chicago, and the way it plays out there is that they are, they're, quote, more liberal, okay? They've passed some laws against, you know, carding people or insisting that they bring security card or something, and we've announced we have our adage on our system, regardless of ability to pay, but yet they're billing people, and they're asking, a lot of times they're asking for social security numbers. Now, you don't have to have one, but, you know, there are issues around the identification and that sort of thing that they're not making subtle, and even though they say they're declaring themselves against discrimination, they also have this law, there's a concern about the secure communities. Chicago did progressive in quotes because they passed a law that says that we're not going to go along with this to some degree, or at least they agreed to not go along with the program of reporting or cooperating that much with the federal government. One reason is it's financed, because because they've been keeping people in the jail longer, waiting for the ICE people to come pick them up. And so it's costing the county a lot of money. So this is another reason that, they care that much about the undocumented. But an interesting thing, the way it played out in our recent, we've had some cutbacks when they shut down three hospitals. One of them was a long-term care hospital. We had people that were on ventilators for many years. And interestingly, they have other services. They have rehab and that sort of thing. They've been cutting back the hospital for years. And what happened was they cut the hospital to the point where the ventilator patients were shipped out to other facilities. Now, these patients have been, some of them have been for many years, and some of them had not even had a bed sore because they were, had extremely good care. I'll give you a couple of cases that were a quick example. One guy was a gentleman that had multiple sclerosis. He was not undocumented. He had some insurance. He was shipped out of this facility to a nursing home that they were, a very cheap nursing home regarded as being not a very good place. He was there for 14 years at the hospital. 3 weeks later, he's dead from pneumonia. So the conditions, this is a guy that has insurance. Now what happened, interestingly, was an undocumented worker who we were very close to, that people, some of us know, was in that same hospital, but he didn't have insurance, so they couldn't send him anywhere yet. So he ends up in the main hospital downtown. He's still alive, okay, because he doesn't have any coverage. But it's just an interesting juxtaposition of how the system works. What I'm trying to say is, one of the things that that I've noticed is that, okay, they openly are not, in a racist way, not covering undocumented, but also the safety net hospitals, such as the one I work in, are the main places that are going to take care of many of these people, and many of the Medicaid people. But also, the way the Affordable Care Act, my reading of it is, a lot of the money that would have gone to safety net institutions went away. I mean, like in Massachusetts, from what I understand, they had, if anyone's here from there, what I understand is a lot of money that had gone to safety net institutions went to that insurance program, and so it would be like a double whammy. You get more patients and have to cover more, but yet be funded less. So, the third component of this is, no one talks about, or at least I think it was alluded to over here, that people get sick, and if you get sick, you can pass your sickness along to someone else. And you're not taking care of those people. I mean, there's any number of diseases. They have this new movie out, Contagion or something, that's supposed to be a good indication of how public health works. But this is an example of where, you know, everyone, if you don't take care of everyone, everyone suffers. And that's an issue that people don't, I don't think the public doesn't understand.
some of the points you brought up, because it's the same point he talked to me about, but you know, maybe after you talk, yeah.
Evidence, it gets produced by the Joint Policy Committee in June
It can pass. If it then passes by the Joint Policy Committee, it gets voted on in the General Council, which always meets on Tuesdays of APHA, and then it becomes APHA policy. In order to get to this point, you do not want just to be one caucus or one section putting in a proposal. You want to talk as well and to talk to other caucuses and so on. So that they know, give their input, help you in the editing process, and as well then ultimately at the then agree and will vote for it. But as well, what happens is that one caucus or one section or one stick is maybe the lead agency, but then you have co-sponsors. So other people, so we were, like when we talk about Latino and focus on immigrant health, and so on, so you have then a co-sponsored resolution. So it's not only like one purpose. So you try then, so even if we, for example, say we want to do now a policy on migrant farm workers or on something else or something, if it's sponsored by the Caucus on Refugee and Immigrant Health, you try then to reach out to Latinos and to the rural caucus or whoever, HIV caucus, whatever it is about. You don't try to operate it in a vacuum just on your own. So that is
the
very important to understand. So
yeah, the more people you have supporting it, the better chance you have of it passing. That the number in strength, just like you were talking about, is about
the number of people who buy in. So personally, I tend to think sometimes it's better not to have too much of a group in the policy formulation process, because then it becomes sometimes unwieldy. So what in terms of the, and then the other important point I think is as well, APHA did a whole session actually on Monday morning on this policy process. And one key issue was is once you have the APHA policy in place, what happens then? Then the real work really starts kind of to disseminate and to do something, because it has to have some action steps. It has, for example, if you say, for example, you want to do something like to push for that undocumented should be able to enroll into the exchange, if that ends up being the policy, we then want to disseminate the information, have the senators, have the congressmen do something, have the president do something. So that kind of leads then to the question, what next? So the policy is just something that we can quote and say, this is APHA, the whole organization is behind it, but then the other question, what do we do on the ground really to make it happen? And that's the one really regular question. So
actually, APHA has an action group.
To amplify on this a little bit more, the action steps, and this is part of what we've been talking about, the action steps, according to the rules of APHA, the action steps cannot direct APHA itself to do anything. So we can make an action step might be Congress and the President should eliminate the exclusion of undocumented immigrants from health care. But an action step cannot say APHA should hold a press conference on this problem. So you've got a kind of a self-defeating step that's built into this process. And so, I mean, once it passes, I mean, we have to use our own inventive kind of ways of trying to turn this into something that might actually do something. The other thing I wanted to mention briefly is this question about piggybacking with other sections and caucuses and things like that, and particularly the Latino caucus. When we put this resolution together, and when there was this kind of shotgun wedding thing that happened at the last minute, things went very fast, and we didn't really get a whole lot of time to, at least I didn't get a lot of time to learn from the necessarily assume that the Latino caucus is going to be really strong on doing this. I think they might support it, but I think if we really want to get something, a policy thing saying undocumented workers shouldn't be attacked by secure communities, or shouldn't be excluded from health care, I think we would really need to do it in this caucus and
go forward from there.
In our caucus, yeah. In this caucus and then try to get the Latino caucus and other caucuses involved.
I've been involved, I mean, in all fairness, I've been involved at least two or three policies on the APHA level, and actually one of them got passed a few years ago because I'm in the leadership team for the HIV section. So I'm actually involved in policy rising, policy revolution. I'm passing policy at the APHA level. So, and I also know that the APHA has what they call the action steps, action committee. That part of their job is to try to go ahead and implement some of the policies that APHA has on the book. Because one of the people in the leadership group for the HIV section was a member of that. That's what she does for the APHA. And the first big part of it is always the question of research. You know, what does the literature, what is the scientific evidence? And that's one of the biggest issues in terms of when we talk about refugee and immigrants in the context of health or in the context of healthcare reform, what it means for them. One of the biggest challenges, we don't have a lot of research exactly. Many of the things we have so far are really based on real life accounts, people experiencing this in their jobs or in their communities. Unfortunately, we haven't been doing extensive research enough to focus on this area, so we have the scientific evidence, because to write a policy for APHA, you need the scientific evidence. Many of the work that has been here.
Very new to this. Excuse me.
It's okay.
You said you don't have the scientific evidence. When you say that, what do you mean exactly? Because there's so many articles being written on the healthcare of immigrant children today, and I mean, yeah. You know, and of course, it's being written on just between two groups alone, Latinos and Asians. So
you just answered my question. That was exactly what I meant.
Okay.
You just answered my question. I was going to break it down, but you just answered my question. No. You just answered my question.
Okay.
Because unfortunately, anytime we talk about immigrants, we're talking, usually people think of Latino or Asians, and that's the group that I have a lot of work done on them. But then the reason why the caucus was put together is because we realize when we talk about immigrants, there's a whole group of people. They ain't Asian or Hispanic. You know, that look like you and me. I think I spend more time telling people I'm an African immigrant than anything else. If you go to Purdue campus, without my name, if you point out my, or people that, oh, she's an African immigrant. If it's possible, I'll write it on my forehead. It's part of this whole idea because we keep getting lumped with African Americans. So that's one thing. So when we think about African immigrants, I mean, when we think about immigrants, we tend to think of these two groups, and research has been done on them. I mean, there's work on them. That's one point. Another point is the whole question of refugees. There's work going on now, but we don't have that body of literature yet.
Oh.
And even within the refugee community, there's been some work done on Bomanese, for example, but they're actually Asians too. The point I'm trying to make is, for us to write a good policy, we need the scientific literature. We have to go beyond just these two groups that have been talked about. It's a good thing we have information on these two groups, but is it enough for us? And I think for those who are the moderated section that I moderated, one of the things I talked about was the recognition that there's a huge, just looking at the continent of Africa, you know, there's a huge African immigrants, you know, in the United States, besides, exactly, and from the Caribbean, besides the refugees that are coming in, who have a different status, that we haven't even really done a lot of work on because we classify them as blacks, which means they're African Americans.
Do you know what's the main thing? This is really funny. I just did my qualified paper on looking at black immigrant children, by the way. I just did Creon. I think Creon, black native students, black immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be really, really amazed when it comes to healthcare access. I'm very sorry to say this to people. I was amazed by this myself. I think because we come as black immigrants into this very same community as black natives,
yeah.
If you look at whether or not we have access to healthcare services, whether or not we utilizing the ER, the
mm-hmm.
dental care, medical care, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Our utilization is very similar to black natives,
mm-hmm.
except of course we tend not to use medical health services.
want APHA to have a policy stating that the prisons will provide condoms for jails, what do you call them? Inmates, thank you, that's the word. We'll provide condoms for inmates. And so we have to do a literature, intensive literature review as to what is available out there, you know, and there's been some work done. Now, this policy never went anywhere with the UK because part of the challenge we had was, you know, they argue that they use condoms for, you know, what do you call it? It becomes a weapon in the penitentiary system. Now, there's research that's been done on ex-convicts and the fact that a number of them are HIV positive and they infect each other when they're there. I've done work with ex-convicts in the Pennsylvania penitentiary system that I was shocked to find out that 150% of the men are HIV positive, over 80% of the women are HIV positive. I went to health centers that work with ex-convicts that are HIV positive. And, you know, one of the papers that came out, we talked about situational homosexuality, the fact that many of them are not homosexual. So any program you do for them, they won't go because they're not gay. And then I found out the difference between the recipients. The bottom line is, this is the bottom line. The bottom line is, even though there's work done, we first need to have strong enough So that policy never went anywhere. Just because we didn't have strong enough scientific research on literature to support our argument. So that's one thing we need to keep in mind. So
okay.
I'm in favor of us writing policy.
Okay. What I want to do now, we have only 20 more minutes to go. So I'm going to take it from the back and call everybody to make a comment.
Okay,
so yeah, so I'll start way from the back there.
That's important information for us because that is one of the populations we're committed to remembering. So
thank you so much for that contribution. Okay, next. Thank you. Next. Yep. Okay, what I can think is maybe we may have a session which we may call Massachusetts or other states
healthcare impact on refugees or immigrants or whatever. Yeah, we can have a session that way.
I will have her. Why don't you propose a panel?
Yeah.
Do we have your information?
Yeah.
Propose a panel
about it for you. I think also another thing that needs to be said. I mean, Boston Medical Center and the Cambridge Health Alliance groups are safety net hospital-based institutions in Massachusetts, and of course we lost a lot of our funding because of the healthcare reform. We have to be bailed out to the tune of $90 million twice. So that's $180 million from the federal government because we get paid 64 cents for every dollar of health care we provide. It's bankrupting our hospital. It's bankrupting Cambridge Health Alliance. It's only a matter of time.
That's a future we're looking at.
Exactly. So this is the first year. We just closed the fiscal year with a big deficit. And there's no bailout for us in 2012, FY 2012.
Okay.
I'm going to say, Tony, hold on. Yeah. Why don't you propose a panel?
Yeah, Titi, let's talk to her after that because the time is, you have to finish it. So we'll talk to you after this. Please wait. Okay, next person. Yes. Next person, as we are sending the sheet, the paper, next person, comment. Thank you. Okay, in the back there, you.
Yep. Yeah. My name is Alejandra Tindia. I am a physician in public health.
Oh, please, don't bail out on us yet. Don't bail out, okay? You're going to be next, so don't bail out. Okay.
You're learning about the caucus. You can't even walk out of the room.
Free clinic by MSNBC? Is that the one organized by MSNBC or is just...
No.
Okay.
This is one of the oldest free clinics.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And my question would be, what can we do when we go home to kind of continue this conversation in our, you know, in our respective APHA communities in our local area and at, you know, at the national level? What can we do to kind of advance this policy agenda and move forward after you know, we've all left the room and...
Okay, Esther is going to talk to us about that. Esther will have 5 minutes wrap up. So when we are done. Okay, you want to leave, so let me, so that I can release you now. Okay. Have you signed a sheet to join our caucus? Excellent. Now you can go. Permission to leave. Thank you so much for coming. Okay. Yes. You raise your hand. You wanted to make a point.
I'm also a member of the International Health Section, and within that section there is a smaller policy and advocacy committee that is meant, that group works together to push policies through, and they have a very active listserv that goes on throughout the year. And so it's been very effective for that. I think they got 4 policies through this meeting. And so a lot of times when
Thank you. Esther is taking notes. Okay. Next person. Lady in red. Thank you. Yes. Yes, please. Person.
I teach at the University of Pittsburgh, the graduate school of health. I got interested in the immigrant health not long ago because my work in the past, I've worked with the African American population and I've done a lot of work in the community. I own my own consulting business for 10 years. Then I became a full-time faculty just a year ago at the university. And I got really curious about African immigrants because I'm one of them. You know, you're comfortable and things are going well. But lately, you will hear friends and family members and say, oh, someone died. And, oh, okay, I'm just always curious about numbers because I have an epidemiology background. I say, how old is this person? They say in the 50s, in the 60s, and even in the 40s. Oh, that's premature death. They're dying before
they die.
They say someone just dropped dead. And I said, why are we dropping dead? You know, they use that word. And my point is, as much education as we are, and education is one of the things that people don't know, that's why, we have this disparity.
Okay.
I think this group is educated and they're dropping dead. That means there's something going on in this population. We need to start researching. Then I started looking at literature to see the amount of literature we have on African immigrants. And suddenly it's just like looking, and I barely see, I can only see a handful of literature, and I say, oh my God. They're not even studying us. Nobody's doing anything. I said, okay, who are the nobles? I said, I'm supposed to be a researcher. I'm not even studying this. But we need to start having researchers. I'm so glad to see a young lady. We need a lot of black, especially African immigrant researchers to start doing a lot of studies, start with focus groups, go into research, and whatever we can do to start collecting data. Because as you say, when we're talking of policies, good data, strong data to support whatever we have to present. And if we don't have research, we can't do that. So, and we don't, and at the end of the day, I know we need to collaborate with other corporates, but we have to be very, very careful. We don't want to be lumping this and lumping that. At the end of the day, it's watered down what who we are and what we really, really want. We want to be strong enough to be able to present at least and use other resources to work with us, but we just don't want to be watered down because we don't have those evidence. So I'm hoping, and I'm very, very positive, even though it's a very challenging time, there's money, funding is very, very hard to get, but whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes, we have to find funding to start doing a lot of research among African immigrants, because that's the only way we can show that we have needs as well, and our needs need to be taken care of.
Okay, thank you. I think almost everybody has spoken, but then our communist friend. Because I like Castro, so.
I'm an internist in New York, and I take care of mostly people who have insurance or people in the hospital who are citizens but don't have insurance. And, you know, just to reiterate, although everything that's been said here is very wonderful and inspiring, that the health care for people who are citizens and the uninsured is terrible, too. So everything about lifestyle, the corruption of the drug industry, and the results, you know, the research shows that despite all the money we spend on the insured in this country, we have the worst statistics in terms of actual health and survival of the whole Western world. Mm-hmm. So there is something wrong with the whole effing system.
Anyway, so important questions, issues have been raised here, and I would like to take this opportunity to call on Esther to give us a summary and then to tell us the way forward.
All right. Okay. So I'm
for 5 minutes.
I'm your humble scribe here. I want to say, as a Cuban American, I too feel like there's lives at stake and we have to figure out what can we do. You know, that we feel a sense of urgency. So I want to say that this discussion has been very illuminating for me. For one is working on a policy statement through APHA is one tool we have for mutual education and advocacy, and we can't let it end with APHA. It's really important to think about what might be effective strategies for getting this knowledge out. So I want to say that some very good we've been charged with creating some sort of policy statement that incorporates the immigrant and refugee experience in all of its complexity, that does not leave out immigrants and resettlement issues, refugee and resettlement issues, that does not leave out the specific forms of disenfranchisement that come from diverse immigrant experiences, and especially, I think, one of the things that we want to be attentive to that's been spoken to very eloquently here is the special dilemmas of African diaspora experiences and racialization that takes place in the United States. So I wanted to, the caucus is perhaps a little more informal than some others in that we don't have a membership fee. We don't hold a treasury, but what we do is we do stay connected by email, so we will be communicating with everyone that was here as well as everyone who's come and attended to our programs so that we can pursue this policy statement based on the kinds of themes that were brought up here. One of the things that Ellen just said made me think of is we mustn't forget that in this country we spend more to achieve less through the official healthcare system. And perhaps one of the things that was part of our discussion in previous perspectives on policy is to look at immigrant resources and immigrant strengths. And one of the among the many strengths immigrant communities bring to the U.S. is a very different perspective, both on health assets and resiliency resources, and on political literacy and organizing. I just came a month ago. I worked on the Latin American edition of Our Bodies Ourselves. We had the 40th anniversary of Our Bodies Ourselves. For the first time, we brought the global partners. I've been telling them for 15 years now that it's a shame not to educate the people who use Our Bodies Ourselves about the incredible work going on by women all over the world. And one of the things that I was really, it finally, the new edition finally does incorporate the global partners, and one of the things that was really exciting to see is that there was a special role in global health for the physician activists. I think a lot of the people in APHA who have positions of influence don't know how to use them. And maybe one of the things that we can learn from is the National Social Workers Association takes their immigration policy and creates a toolkit for how to make sure that social workers know all of the different things that they can do with their social work, immigration, and health policy. So perhaps that's one of the things that we need to have a dialogue about that can be part of the listserv. Yes, let's work on this policy, but let's also share some ideas and examples of how you disseminate and advocate each of us in our spheres of influence. So I'll write up these notes so that we can circulate them to both people who were here and people who have attended our other sessions. And, you know, I think we will definitely, you know, we feel a lot of support in pursuing this on behalf of the caucus.
So we will communicate, if you have your email via your email address, with more specifics. One item that I want to commit to is really to find out more about this exclusion of legal immigrants by state to see whether we can have some clarification where it is now and how it differs so that we can clarify this. And then I would ask, will ask people to say if they are interested in working on this policy, because perhaps not everybody who attended a session signed up wants to know every detail, but I would hope that we can have perhaps a group of people who really want to continue working on policy issues, and then we can kind of share drafts and what has been done and update and go more into more detail and more specifics of what has to be done. So that should be coming out soon, in late by December. Mike?
We're actually at 12:05 right now, so officially ended at 12. If anybody wants to make a comment, you can go ahead, but I'm just letting others know in case you want to leave.
So you don't need permission.
Exactly.
Well, just to go back to, you know, to last year's proposal about the exclusion of undocumented immigrants from the health plan, we have gone through several steps, several arduous steps about this, and unfortunately it was the Latino caucus who got the comments about how this thing needs to be improved. With all the work that's gone into it, and with the comments about how it needs to be fixed, it seems like it would be a shame to look. So we hope to be able to get those comments from the Latino caucus right away.
And that would be then part of the first email as an attachment.
Yeah,
you know, so
right.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you all very much for coming in and the wonderful contributions we've given. And then thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay.